Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick her on his choke horse. But it's no Hulk bar, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold. What is up, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep. We're back with another episode of the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast. It's the Friday episode, which means it's just me and my hot takes. As always, go to the link in the description of this video or the audio. The link will be there as well. Join the Discord. Use the WWE affiliate merchandise WWE shop affiliate link, as well as if you're booking a trip or vacation, book through our Expedia link as well. Last thing, you know, like, share, subscribe. If you enjoy the content, leave comments. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a review. 5 stars is preferred if you enjoy the content on Spotify or Google Podcast or Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening. Without further ado, we got a lot to talk about on this episode, so let's jump on in with the first thing being Penta is in the WWE, and we talked about this a little bit, me and Wavy D did on the last episode on Tuesday. We talked a little bit about it, but didn't really expand on it. I want to expand on this because, and even within the last like 24 hours, this situation has changed. And what I mean by that is the situation of the wrestling world. There's a report coming out that several AEW talents who previously may not have considered WWE because they were afraid they would get lost in the system or in the lost in the motions, but then saw Penta's debut, are now considering WWE. Guys, that is a big thing. So let's talk about this, right? Penta had a fantastic debut. He was presented well. He had a really good match, did a really good promo. We'll sit and talk about that in a minute, right? And so just this presentation of Penta from the teaser videos to the actual getting him in the ring, bro, this was fantastic, right? He's very good, right? And I know a little bit about Penta. You know, I didn't watch Lucha Underground a lot, so I didn't watch him there. I know he was in TNA, didn't really pay attention to him there. I really knew him from AEW, and I wasn't a huge fan there because of the style of wrestling, that the super hard, like flippy super kick party stuff like that. And I'm just not like that. That's not my style of wrestling, right? And so when I saw that the rumors were spilling, and then they started doing these teasers, I got a little bit like apprehensive. Like, I don't know how to feel about this. I'm not a big fan of Penta, right? Well, he gets in the ring and he has this match, right? And the first thing that I recognize is this dude's better than I thought he was, right? Because he learned, and however long he's been in the Performance Center or been a part of the company, he's learned what he showed me what he couldn't in AEW, and that is the art of selling. He sold a leg injury like Randy Orton sells injuries, right? Like, this is fantastic. Like, it was just that in and of itself. He was able, like, if he picks up on this, if he continues down this path, I think he has a decent career in front of him. What I don't want to do though is overreact, because I think a lot of WWE hardcore supporters and a lot of the casual fans who maybe have posted their opinions, my fear is that they're going to overreact, right? And that overreaction is he's top level. He should be world champion. I think we need to slow down a minute. Slow that train down. He's not a main event superstar. He's not there yet. Right? And that's not a bad thing, by the way. That's not a bad thing. Let's not overreact. He's top of the tier, mid-card. Like, I can see him in the IC picture. I can see him in the United States title picture. I don't see Penta as world heavyweight champion. I don't see Penta as universal undisputed champion, right? I do see him, if he gets a singles run, being IC champion or US champion. But let's just be 100% honest with ourselves here. He's going to get a singles run for however long it takes for Phoenix to get here. And once Rey Fénix shows up in WWE, they're the top tag team talent in the division. And that's where I believe they will be. I believe when Penta gets here, that's sort of the ceiling for the group. It's not a bad thing. There have been plenty of wrestlers over the history of wrestling who've made a very good living being tag team, the top tag teams in companies, right? And so you don't have to have single star success to be a superstar, right? But I'm a lot more comfortable with the Lucha Bros being in WWE after seeing how they're going to push Penta, right? But we got to talk about that promo, right? Because, what's his name? Dave LaGreca on Busted Open. He said everything that I'm going to say. I'm just going to repeat it. I'm going to give him credit, though, because he said it first. You didn't understand half the promo because he spoke in Spanish. But I didn't have to understand the promo to understand what he was saying to me. What he was saying is, I'm here. This is my home. I'm happy to be here. And you can genuinely feel that when he was speaking. He genuinely felt happy to be there, right? And so that's the art of promo, right? I'm not against foreign people speaking in their language, giving promos. But there's a difference between what I got with Penta in the ring on the promo than what I got with what I get with every single week Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura's promos are awful. And you could throw words on the screen all you want. If there's no emotion, if there's no reason for me to even pay attention to it, I'm not going to pay attention to it. And so I'm engaged in Penta now, right? I believe that his match with Chad Gable, which, first off, what a way to set Penta up for success. They did two things that I think were deliberate in presenting Penta in a way that was guaranteed success. The first, they debuted him in California, in an area where the fan base in the arena was more than likely going to be heavily Hispanic, right? And so they were going to cheer for him. And that's important. I don't think people understand, like, when you make a debut, if the people in the arena don't cheer for you, then the people watching on TV probably aren't going to get behind you, right? And so that's important. So to debut him in a highly Hispanic area, right? Very, very deliberate choice, I believe. But the second thing is they put him in the ring with Chad Gable. And here's what I know about Chad Gable over the years. He's a pro's pro. He's going to do whatever it takes to get whoever he's in the ring with over. He's gotten Otis over. He's gotten the Creeds over. He did his best to try to get the Wyatt Six over. Right, Chad Gable is a pro's pro, and he's in a position. Does he deserve a chance at a world championship? I think he does, but he's in a position where he may go down as the next Dolph Ziggler, right? where he's in the ring of, and that's the guy they trust to get that person, to get people over. And Chad Gable did exactly what he needed to do, right? But here's the big thing I took away from this. Penta was genuinely happy to be there in the big leagues. Yes, I said it, in the big leagues. This is another example as to why casual fans like me, like Wavy D, like Milwaukee Mike, and like Nerdy D say that the WWE is the major leagues. There's nothing wrong with saying AEW is AAA. If y'all know how baseball works, right? To use the baseball analogy, I'm not a big fan of sports analogies, but the organizational structure of pro baseball, I think, is a lot like how the organizational structure of wrestling should be, right? You have, you know, once you get drafted out of high school or college, depending on how good you are, more than likely you're going to get thrown into single A baseball, right? You're still a pro athlete. You're still one of the best baseball players in the world, but you're not at that elite level yet, right? Now single A baseball is separated into low A and high A. That doesn't matter for this analogy, but just so you guys know that, right? So you work your way up. You start in low A. You then, if you're really good, you'll get caught up probably within 2 to 3 months to high A, right? And that, this is, so single A baseball and then double A baseball, I'm going to group into it as well. This is the indies. But if, well, let's back it up a little bit. Single A baseball is the indies. There's a lot of prospects. They're vying for the spot to get caught up. There's a lot of prospects. We got a lot of good players that are trying, you know, having matches. You don't get paid a lot, right? That's the indies, right? Double A baseball is the CMLLs, the New Japans, the Pro Wrestling Noahs, the bigger indie markets that are closer to, right, the TNAs, right? That's double A baseball, right? These are better than double or single A players, right? And let's just be honest, right? It's a hierarchy, right? Majority of baseball players who end up playing pro baseball don't make it past double A baseball. They spend their entire baseball pro career playing single A or double A, just like wrestling. Excuse me, just like professional wrestlers. A majority of pro wrestlers will never make the big leagues, right? And so AAA baseball, well, this is AAA baseball for the most part. These are your elite-level prospects, and they're either not 100% ready, they still need a little bit of development, or what tends to happen is they're the older players that just need a payday before retirement, right? And that actually works better in a hockey analogy, where I can say like the NHL versus the AHL system, because the AHL is better in that analogy, where it's the elite level prospects on your system that play in the AHL, or it's the older guys that you have signed the contracts who aren't good enough to be NHL players, but can still play at an elite level against lower competition. They're, you know, 37, 38, 39 years old. They just need a place to play to get a paycheck, right? And that's what AEW is. If you notice what AEW has become, it's the up-and-coming superstar that most of the wrestling fan base, and let's just be honest, the casuals make up a majority of the fan base, right? And so when I say most of the fan base, I'm talking about the casuals. So that's what AEW is. It's the people, the up-and-comers that the casuals don't know about, the majority of the wrestling fan base doesn't know about, or it's the older people like an MVP or a Jeff Jarrett who just need a paycheck, right, prior to leaving the business. This is where the you know, and no disrespect to the legends who are there, right? This is where the Jake the Snakes go. This is where Ric Flair ends up, because WWE is not going to pay you, right, to put you on TV the amount of money that you need, because you need a paycheck prior to retirement, right? And so that's what AEW, and there's nothing wrong with AEW being AAA baseball. AAA games are really fun to go to. And part of the AAA roster are elite level athletes who at any moment could get called up to the big leagues. But that big league system is going to be the WWE. And what I, right? And this is a whole other argument that we have this conversation in a few minutes on a different topic, right? But bro was genuinely happy. Penta was genuinely happy to be in that ring in San Jose. I thought it was a perfect debut, right? I thought it was the perfect way to debut him. Good match, good promo. And now I'm excited to see Penta. And in one promo, you made me feel, I'm just going to say it. In one promo, Penta made me feel more emotionally invested in him and his character than Ricochet did in his entire time in WWE. I'm just going to say it. Now, I know Ricochet's doing some good heel work in AEW right now. Right, but when we compare Ricochet in WWE to Penta in WWE, Penta in one match and in one promo made me more emotionally invested in who he is and who his character is than Ricochet did his entire run. Right, and that's what I believe the difference is. Right. So, in similarity to this, in terms of talking about what I believe. People, I believe most wrestlers see WWE as the dream location. And here's why. Penta went there, right? Stephanie Vaquer had a bag of money sent to her to be in AEW. Like Tony Khan, I'm sure, offered the world to her, right? To be in on Dynamite and be in these big shows and face Mercedes and all of this, right? Stephanie Vaquer said, no, I got a dream that I want to follow. A dream, my dream to be in WWE is now attainable. Why would I pass that up? Right? And I believe that even now, that if you're a pro wrestler, if your dream is not WWE, you're not dreaming hard enough. If your dream is to make it to AEW, you're not dreaming hard enough. WWE is the dream location. AEW is a good second place. It's the good launching point that if you got there, like let me say it this way. If I was a pro wrestler and I ran the indie scene and AEW offered me a contract, I'm not going to deny it, but I'm going to accept it, and I'm going to straight up tell Tony Khan, you're my stepping stone. Here's what I mean by that. You're going to put me on TV, and I'm going to prove to the WWE that they need to hire me, because my goal, right? And Tony Khan running this business should recognize I'm the stepping stone to make, right? Right. You could claim I made Penta. Claim it. Right. You made Penta. Right. Cool. But Penta's now in the big league. If Tony Khan had some common sense in him, He would recognize his role in the development of pro wrestling. And if he cared about the business as much as he says that he does, he would recognize his role as a developmental system meant to continue the development of wrestlers to get them to WWE, right? Because when WWE is at its best is when pro wrestling is at its best, right? Let's not get it twisted. Let's not get it twisted. Tony Khan should, if I was Tony Khan, my business model would be, we're here to build the next superstars that are going to main event WrestleMania. That would be my business model. That we're going to put on great content to get people recognized so that WWE has a new host of superstars. Like if I'm Tony Khan, I'm seeing this WWE NXT and TNA deal, this partnership that gets signed, and I'm getting on the phone with Nick Khan and TKO and Ari Emanuel and saying, hey, I want in on this deal. How does AEW get involved in this? What do we need to do to help develop the next level of superstar for your company, right? That's what I would do. That's what I would do. Not because I want and so AEW fans will hear that. AEW fans will hear that, you just want AEW to die and go. No. I want them to succeed because their success is AEW's success is WWE's success. Because if I'm WWE, I'm looking at AEW and I'm saying, these guys have talent. We're taking them. Thank you, AEW. If I'm WWE, I'm not looking at AEW as competition. I'm looking at them as free development of talent. And so I'm looking at someone like a Mariah May. I'm looking at someone like Willow Nightingale. I'm looking at someone like Chris Statlander, at Ricky Starks, at Powerhouse Hobbs. I'm looking at someone like that, and I'm saying, they got some talent on this roster. We're going to take them when they're available. Thank you, AEW, for developing their wrestling ability. Now we're going to show them how to be entertainers. And that's just the third leg of your development. Because now you have WWE ID that's starting up. You have the NIL program that's made absolute superstars, right? If anyone tells you that WWE NIL does not work, they know absolutely nothing about NXT. The world champion, the NXT champion, is a product of the NIL class. I think Obafemi was in the second NIL class, right? So this isn't, it's not like there's no, like, Kalani Jordan's part of it. Sol Ruka is a part of it. I don't think Sol Ruka got NIL money for it, but she was a part of the sort of college to WWE tryout system that WWE started around the time NIL was a thing and was getting started, right? But Sol Ruka, Jasmine Nix, Jada Parker, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. There's a lot of women in NXT, a lot of men in NXT, a lot of super, Dion Lennox. You know, me and Wavy D talk about Dion Lennox all the time. Like, he's got future super from NIL. Out the Mud, Lucian Price and his teammate's name, which is slipping my mind right now. NIL, right? It works. Hank and Tank. NIL, it works. It's a system that has proven to work. And now they're getting WWE ID, which is also going to be a system that works and trains people not just to be in the ring, do the moves, X's and O's, but how to sell, how to tell a story, how to get fans invested. Because let's just be honest, wrestling, when it's just the X's and O's, and people are going to hate me for this, it's just two people in their underwear, fake fighting. When all that matters is the X's and O's, you're just watching fake fighting. What matters in this business is the very thing that it was predicated on for its success. Storytelling, character, gimmick, character development, right? That is the most important part of this business. I know it's a hot take. But that is the most important part of this business, right? And so part of this dream thing that I'm talking about, I believe it was Penta's dream, right? There's another one. I believe it's her dream, right? Thunder Rosa. Now, I've been critical of Thunder Rosa because there are backstage reports that she didn't get along with some of the locker room. And I think in her feud with Britt, she was sandbagging a little bit. For those who don't know what sandbagging is, it's just not selling moves or being super stiff in the ring. But she named her three dream opponents that she wants to wrestle before she retires. She named Charlotte, she named Bayley, she named Bianca Belair. These are very interesting choices to me. When you're asked the question, what are your dream matches? And you name WWE superstars, this tells me her dream is to be in WWE. And if I'm Triple H, I'm seeing this. Thunder Rosa is very talented, right? And she's very, she has a lot of experience in wrestling. If I'm Triple H and I'm seeing this, I'm calling Thunder Rosa. Hey, how much longer do you have on your contract? We want you over here. We could use you in the mid-card. We could use you to help promote the women's U.S. title or the women's IC title, right? And get you in that picture, right? We could use a Thunder Rosa. And I'm getting you over there. And I'm putting you in these dream matches because I think a Thunder Rosa versus a Bayley would be really fun. I think a Thunder Rosa versus Bianca would be an interesting match because I this would not be one that I would have guessed that she would have wanted to do. The styles are so completely different. And who doesn't want to face Charlotte Flair? Like, if you're a woman in wrestling, your goal is to be Charlotte, to face Charlotte Flair. She is the standard of pro wrestling in the women's division. She is the GOAT of women's wrestling. Let's just call spades spades, right? Charlotte Flair is the greatest in women's wrestling history. So why would you not want to face Charlotte, right? Especially knowing that Rhea Ripley was made because Charlotte put her over. And Tiffany Stratton, I believe, will have that same pathway because I believe Charlotte's going to put her over at Mania this year, right? And Tiffany's going to get that rocket launch from being for beating Charlotte, right? And so when I sit here and say, when someone like Nerdy D sits here and on his show, the Casual Wrestling Show, and says WWE is the big leagues and everyone's dream is to get there, this is why. Because there's empirical evidence, right? I guarantee if you go out and ask 100 pro wrestlers who are working the indies right now, if they got a contract off, or not even ask if they got a contract. Hey, what is your dream in this industry? What is your dream? Now, you're going to get some that are like, I'm already living my dream. I just want it to be a wrestler. And those are the weirdos who enjoy the indie life. And that's fine. There are going to be those. I think a lot of pro wrestlers have self-awareness that, you know, only the best of the best are going to make it to WWE. So I think a lot of pro wrestlers have that self-awareness. Excuse me. But if you ask some of the good ones, hey, what is your dream? I guarantee you most of them will say WWE. Right. I'm also certain that if you ask them, if AEW offered you a contract but WWE didn't, would you take it? And I'm guaranteeing you that all of them would say yes as a launching point, similar to Jade Cargill, similar to Penta, similar to, you know, Cody wanted to get into a position to where he was a top WWE superstar. So what did he do? He befriended the Young Bucks and the Elite and Tony Khan, made a company with the entire goal. And I told you guys this in 2019. I've been saying since 2019 that Cody Rhodes was going to jump ship. He would be the first one to do it. His entire purpose of even being involved in this, I believed in 2019 before things even happened, that his entire purpose was to get back to WWE. And I predicted in 2019 that people were going to recognize that WWE was still the better company, and that within 5 to 6 years, people were going to start jumping ship. And guys, we're at that point. Cody's jump ship. Jade's jump ship. Penta's jump ship. Other people, and like I just said at the top of the show, there are other reports of people considering jumping ship and considering WWE as an option who weren't previously considering that. I don't know names. That's going to be interesting, though, to see the – like, I wonder if MJF looks at where he's being booked at on the AEW card and wonders if re-signing with them was worth it or if he should have gone to WWE. I wonder if someone like a Daniel Garcia is going to Tony Khan and say, man, I know I signed the contract, but can we get out of this? Is there a way out? I need to go to WWE, right? I wonder about a Ricky Starks whose contract's apparently about to expire. And I wonder, like, does he resign or does he see WWE and his buddy Cody over here, right? And so that is what I sit here and wonder. I wonder about some of the free agent, like, independent stars who aren't necessarily signed to one of these contracts, or to some of these TNA wrestlers who probably would fit better in an AEW system in terms of the X's and O's, you know, like a Speedball. The Speedball signed with MLW, which makes no sense to me, but that's a different conversation. But someone like a Josh Alexander, like, he would probably, because he's a workhorse. He's a wrestler, right? But he would probably work better and get more fan, like people would know him in AEW. But if he showed up in WWE and got used properly, Josh Alexander's a superstar, right? So I wonder about some of these people, like, if they see this, and the proof's just in the pudding, like I've been saying, people are going to start jumping ship. That's just the bottom line, Some other news that I want to touch on just a little bit, probably going to spend 30 seconds on this, right? The Wyatt Six are now apparently SmackDown superstars. They've been transferred to SmackDown. Netflix didn't want them. I don't want them. They could be off the TV for all I care. This just goes to show you that Triple H, for whatever reason, has some sort of investment in getting the Wyatt Six on TV and getting them over. It makes no sense to me. But they are now on SmackDown. I'm going to assume, since they're selling masks, replica masks now, that they're going to actually be on this episode on Friday. I'm not looking forward to it. Like I said, I predicted back in June of last year when they debuted that it was going to be a complete miss, and it's exactly what it is. And now they're just trying to sort of salvage what they can get out of it. They haven't even been on TV in, what, a month, if not more, longer than that. So it's kind of hard to even know what storyline they're going, but yeah. All right, three more big news stories to talk about, and then we'll get to the main event, which is me predicting the NXT, their next PLE, which is Vengeance Day. All right, so this next big news story is Saturday Night Main Event, apparently, according to Peacock scheduling, has their next two. So they got one in a week from Saturday. So on the 25th, there is a Saturday Night Main Event. And then there's two more that have been scheduled, apparently, according to Peacock. One for, I think it's May 24th, and the other for, it's like July 12th or something. I don't want to give false information, but it's, yeah, like July 12th. Now, typically, so it's been brought to my attention that the May 24th show is typically the weekend they run, that AEW runs Double or Nothing, and July 12th is the weekend that AEW All In Texas is running their show on July 12th, which is the same date. So I got three things that I want to say, because AEW fans are mad. They're big mad. Ah, here WWE again running events on the same day AEW. You don't do that. You can't schedule. Guys, calm down. Stop typing. Let's talk about it. So I live by a business principle. Like, if I were to go into business, I live by a business principle. And that business principle is adapt or die. You either have to adapt to the situation going on, or your business dies. Just because in the previous 100 years of the industry, companies try not to schedule on the same weekend doesn't mean that one company will start it and that will become the trend. Guys, I need to let you know something. Vince McMahon's not running this show no more, right? And as much crap as people talked about Vince McMahon, Vince had a lot of respect for the traditions of the business, right? Endeavor doesn't care about all of that. All Endeavor cares about is money and winning. And this is war. Whether or not we want to claim it as war, I believe Endeavor sees AEW in some light as competition, right? And so you either have to adapt or now I also don't see an issue with running shows on the same night. Just because you're running All In Texas on July 12th and that's your biggest event of the year, that doesn't mean that WWE just has to sort of take a back seat. You don't own the weekend. You don't own the weekend. The world doesn't revolve around All In Texas. So if they want to run a Saturday night main event show on the same night, they more than in their right, like so let me just use this example. Pepsi announces that on July 31st they're gonna release a brand new flavor of Pepsi. Right, Coke sees this announcement and says, you know what? This sounds good. Whatever the new flavor is, you can come up with that in your mind. This is gonna sell, people are gonna be interested. They're seeing all the good press about this new flavor, and people are saying they're interested and they can't wait. And so Coke, being who they are, being the big dogs in the industry, the top dogs in the industry, decides, hey, that same day, we're going to release a new flavor of Coke. Can Coke not do that? Is that against the rules? It's the same thing. You don't own a release date. It's like getting upset. Today's Friday. This is the day new music gets released. Let's actually pull up Apple Music for a second. And so I don't really follow people's releases. I sort of just get surprised when I see new music gets released. I don't really keep up with that. But let's go to the charts here real quick. And new music. So let's do Logic, apparently, has dropped a new EP. Should Logic be upset because Busta also released a new EP? I don't know why Busta still released the music, but that's a different thing. Or that Warner Records just released a new album for Mac Miller. Logic is run by BMG or 301 Productions, which is licensed by BMG. Should BMG be upset that Warner released new music or that Busta really? No, because you don't own a release date. You don't own the day Friday for releasing music. That's just the day music gets released, right? And AEW doesn't own All In Weekend just because they run it every week. And then May 24th is Double or Nothing. You don't own that's I don't know which is that Memorial Day or Veterans Day weekend. I don't remember dates of holidays. Memorial Day. It's Memorial Day weekend, which is typically when Double or Nothing gets run. Guys, you don't own Memorial Day weekend. Now, my second point on this is everyone is freaking out. Like WWE just put a PLE on the same day, which if they had, I'd still have the same opinion that you don't own the weekend, right? Even if you had done, You know, even if WWE did schedule a PLE on the same day and the same weekend as Double or Nothing, that I don't see anything wrong with that. That's business, adapt or die. But they scheduled a Saturday night main event. Guys, let's just understand what these are. These are glorified house shows. And no, the response, well, so is Raw. So is, no. Raw and SmackDown are televised shows. There's a difference between Raw and SmackDown and your standard house show. All Saturday night main event is a house show with a budget that is aired on Peacock and NBC. So here's my statement on this. If you can't outdraw a glorified house show with your biggest shows of the year being Double or Nothing and All in Texas, that's not WWE's problem. That's AEW's problem. If you can't outdraw that, if your viewership isn't better than Saturday night main events for your pay-per-view, for right, because I'll be honest with you, I'm more than likely, and that's even including the one on the 25th, more than likely going to either record it and watch it after the fact, or just completely not even watch it. Because the last one, the first one that they did in December, didn't really appeal to what I wanted. It was quite boring. There's no storyline to it. It is just a house show. And so if you're mad because WWE schedules glorify, let me tell you what they're doing. Let me tell you what Endeavor's doing with these type of shows, right? Because it's actually pretty obvious. So if you notice, if you remember the news report that towards the end of last year that they were going to stop doing live house shows on Saturdays and Sundays. So typically, like, the schedule for a wrestler would be, if you're on Raw, you worked Monday, and I believe the Raw house show was Saturday. And then SmackDown would work Friday, and their house show would be Sunday. And it was like Sunday Slammer or something like that. Well, the Saturday show was called Saturday Night's Main Event. Well, they canceled house shows for several reasons. One, to save money, but two, to give more off time to the wrestlers so that they're not wrestling 300 days a year. Or traveling so that they can have more time with their families. And it's a new regime, and this is fantastic, right? Everyone seems to be happy about it. But what they're going to end up doing then is, of course, they're going to run house shows with the European tour. They'll still do that. I know they're going to start picking that back up in March on the way to Mania, and they'll probably do it again on the way to SummerSlam. But these Saturday night main events, these are typically either a week after a PLE, or a week or two after a PLE, or like the one on the 25th, the week before a PLE. And all this is going to be is what's not going to be on the PLE. So the 24th of May, now we don't have pay-per-view dates, but I'm assuming that that's either the week before Crown Jewel or a week or two after Crown Jewel. So Mania is the 19th and the 20th of April. Backlash, I think, is next. And so I'm trying to remember the schedule here. So what I think is, so Backlash will probably be like the 17th, right? So Backlash will probably be May's pay-per-view on like the 10th or the 17th, right? Which is about a month after, right? You'll have Saturday night main event on the 24th, and you'll probably do Crown Jewel on June 7th, right? It's probably like June 7th or June 14th, something around that day, right? And that's probably going to be, right? Now you go down to July, you got July 12th. That's going to probably, if history continues, Money in the Bank will be July 5th. July 12th is going to be the Saturday night main event. And it's just going to be the overflow from the that's not on the pay-per-view. It's going to be your house show. It's you may get some big names. You may get The Rock or Cena on some of these, right? Definitely Cena is going to be on some of these. But I don't see a big deal. If you can't outrun a house show that has some production level to it, that's an AEW problem. I don't know why you're so upset. You don't own a weekend. The business is changing. You either adapt or die. And that's how I'll end with that. We'll continue talking about AEW because we got a situation coming here. They're making a very bad first impression on the Australia market. Now, here's the first thing I need to say. Because AEW fans are going to go around and saying, well, we're going to sell out Australia on the first time there. This is big. That's going to be their narrative. I need to explain this. I need to explain this. Selling out Australia is not a flex, because that is a market starving for this type of entertainment. It is starving for this level of entertainment in wrestling. They don't have a WWE or an AEW that runs weekly shows in Australia. That level of where you get the biggest names of the biggest names. Right? So they're starving for this. So you put wrestling, if you put AEW on it, of course there's going to be interest. But let me read this. So this is from the X account, at Air Gold, AIRGOLD _, is the account. From my understanding, he is a AEW supporter, so like he's not hating on AEW by making this post. Because if someone like Jobber, I like Jobber, but if I would have shared something like Jobber, AEW fans would be like, oh, he's a hater. When really he's not. If you actually go back and check his tweets from 2019, 2020, 2021, bro loved AEW. So just like I did. Like I came into 2019 AEW excited. 2020 AEW excited. So the question you have to ask is why did you lose these fans? What did you do? What did the programming have inside of it that made these guys who very much loved your product at the beginning no longer watch your show? That's an AEW question they need to ask. But anyway, this is an AEW supporter, right? So I don't get caught or saying, oh, you only find the haters. No. But this is his post. Grand Slam Australia is already a mess. And then he lists the list of events. AEW initially booked a stadium for their Australia debut, but had to downsize to an entertainment center because of lack of interest. So even in a starving market, you guys had to downsize to a you went from stadium to arena, and cool, you're going to put 50,000 in ticket sales. That's cool. Again, starving market. Let's continue. Australia fans bought tickets expecting a stadium pay-per-view, you know, similar to Wembley, but only end up with what might be a TV taping / collision. Now, the response to this is, well, AEW never promoted it as a pay-per-view. Grand Slam has always been a TV taping. Guys, you don't market a stadium show for collision. Right? Everyone who bought a ticket when the tickets went on sale last year for this show had every right to assume that it was going to be a pay-per-view because you rented out a stadium for the show. Let me tell you what happened. Tony Khan saw the success of Elimination Chamber in Australia and tried to outdo it. And there's no interest there. There's no interest. Or not as much interest as he expected. And so he downsized. I don't have a problem with him downsizing. It happens in wrestling all the time. WWE did it for, Money in the Bank in Vegas a few years ago. They just did it for NXT when they were in St. Louis. Like, it happens. but you promoted a pay-per-view. Let's just be honest. Everyone assumed it was going to be a pay-per-view. Let's not sit here and act like y'all knew this was going to be a TV taping and that they're justified. Oh, it's always been. Guys, you rented out a stadium for a TV taping? Either you're incompetent because you rented out a stadium for a TV taping, or you're incompetent because you rented out a stadium and the fans assumed because you rented out a stadium, it was a paper, right? Right. Either way, it's bad business. And you should have went from the cuff, off the cuff, and said it's not a pay-per-view if it wasn't going to be a pay-per-view. Let's go to the next step, the next thing. The show is confirmed to air on tape delay 18 hours after it happens, even though streaming is an option. You got a brand new Max deal. I guess you can't use it. Now, I'm not the big fan of hating on tape delay. It's understandable. I wish WWE aired some of their, you know, like the Saudi shows on tape delay. But I understand why they don't, because streaming is an option, right? In the world of streaming, why would you tape delay, right? So I understand why people are laughing at this. Right. AEW is advertising that the show will air on TNT, but that won't happen because NBA All-Star Saturday is already scheduled for the exact same day and the exact same time, and it doesn't seem like AEW is aware of this. Guys. Let me rant for a minute. How the hell does a billion-dollar company, let's back it up a little bit. How the hell does a million-dollar company who has a million-dollar TV deal with one of the major conglomerates in TV production in Warner, who understand, how do you not understand that you're not the top product that they're going to offer on their show? You got hockey and basketball still. But how do you market a show without even communicating once to verify a date and a time that this will air on TNT to make sure you give the right information to your fans? How do you not do that? How do you not send one email? And if you did, was there a miscommunication? What level of incompetency are we looking at in the organization known as AEW? Guys, this is why people like me and other casual fans who try to give AEW the benefit of the doubt time and time again see the behind the scenes. This isn't even an on the screen thing that I'm judging, I'm critiquing, right? Because everyone always comes at me, oh, you just hate on AEW, you're a hater. No. Guys, I'm talking about business right now. I'm talking from a business perspective. How does this happen? Not one person tried to confirm a start time and a start date for the show. Is there no, like, and then if it wasn't confirmed, not one person saw the graphic that told people to watch on TNT at 8 p.m. on the 15th of February, or excuse me. Yeah, February 15th. Not one person. I just realized something. Not one person. What I realized is that. Oh, shit. Vengeance Day is the same day as Grand Slam. Y'all, this shit about to get ruined. Not one person, let's continue that thought, though. Not one person saw this and said, no, don't air that yet. Don't put that on TV. Don't put that on Twitter. Not one person was competent enough to not make the company look like a bunch of rambling idiots. How does this happen? Someone explain to me this. How does this happen? And don't use the excuse of, well, everyone fucks up. But this is not just a fuck up, right? It's one thing to like make a mistake on production, or, you know, WWE has done it before where like a wrong button gets pushed and Bianca Belair is coming to the ring, but the nameplate that shows up is Bailey or something. And I'm just using an example that may or may not have happened in those particular two wrestlers. But yeah, WWE has some production flaws every now and then. Right? I mean, ESPN just had one during college bowl games, during the Fresno State game. Fresno State's team name is the Bulldogs, Bulldogs. And they had Bulldogs, Bulldongs, on the screen. Just a miss, a typo that someone didn't catch. I get that mess ups happen. Right? I get it. But this right here is not just a mess up. Like, one, this is a level of incompetency, right? This is either no communication or just Tony Khan or whoever is in charge of doing all of this, like either not communicating with Warner or having misinformation or whatever. I don't know what's going on. I can't explain it. Can someone explain it to me? Like, this makes zero sense to me how this happened. Right. Woo. All right. So let's get into the last big major news story that I want to talk about. Give me one second. I got to pull up my notes on it. And that is Jada Parker in this situation. And there's a lot going on here. Where do we even start with this story, right? So I guess we'll start with what apparently happened. Now, here's the thing. I don't have the time in the world to monitor social media like the way some of these people do. And so I had no idea what was going on. Right. Wavy D, I think it was Wavy D, who was like, hey, y'all see this Jada Parker stuff? And then that piqued my interest. So I started looking it up. But like, I don't have the time in the world to devote a lot of like at the time to like go and watch what every wrestler does. Right. So apparently what had happened was Jada Parker clicked like on a post on, I'm assuming it's Instagram, and the post was like a news article stating and talking about how the House of Representatives in the United States, the U.S. House of Representatives, had passed a bill, and for those who don't understand how the government works, this doesn't mean that the bill becomes a law. It just means it's going forward to the Senate. Right, but the House has passed it. Now the Senate has to pass it. And if the Senate passes, then the president gets to either sign off or veto, right? That's how this works. Just for you guys who don't understand how it works, right? So the House of Representatives passed off a bill that basically would make it banned for biological males who transition into being a female to play in female sports. This is a touchy topic, right? And so it's not really. I'm not concerned one bit to talk about this, right? And so let's go back to the preface of the show here. If you are SAWFT, you've been forewarned, not just for the IWC, because of my casual hot takes. But if you are SAWFT about talking about topics like this and this triggers you, y'all go ahead and get the hell out of here. I love your support, But we're going to talk about the issues, right? I try not to bring politics in it until politics gets involved in wrestling, right? And so here's what I don't like. I don't like people using cancel culture, right? And so what's going on is she likes this post, and some nerd somewhere down the line, probably in mom's basement, covered in Cheeto dust and Mountain Dew, found this post and saw that Jada Parker liked it and stalked the likes and all of this. And I don't know, maybe they got a notification. I do know that every now and then Instagram will send notifications that so-and-so liked so-and-so's post, has nothing to do with me. I don't like notifications like that because it doesn't have anything to do with my content, right? Why are you sending that to me? I don't care. But anyway, right? Maybe they got that. Jada Parker liked so-and-so's post. They clicked on it to see the post that she liked, and that was it. Who knows, right? Even still, who has time to see this happen, right? And then go all out and make a campaign that Jada Parker is now transphobic, right? Without even knowing her as a person or understanding the issue at hand. Because let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. A lot of wrestling fans are completely oblivious to how the political system in America works or what the issues actually are. Lucky for you. Lucky for you guys. Outside of wrestling, one of my other favorite things to sit and participate in is the political process. So I'm going to help you explain this issue, right? And tell you why I don't think Jada Parker did anything wrong. And if there was anyone whose opinion that I would take on this issue and I would listen to, it would be Jada Parker. So two, and I'll explain that in a minute, but two points that I need to make before we get there. The first is, no one is obligated to accept your belief system. Black, white, gay, straight, trans, none of, all of that, right? No one is obligated to accept your lifestyle or your belief system, right? And that goes both ways. Y'all don't have to agree with what I say. I don't have to agree with how you live, right? No one's obligated to that. Jada Parker's point number two. Jada Parker can like whatever she wants to on social media. Y'all need to go touch some grass. Stop stalking people on social media, right? Social media has become a place, and social media is a good tool, but it has become a place where people just sit on here and just stalk these celebrities and try to find one area where they slip and then try to get them canceled. That's crazy, dog. Go touch some grass. Go leave mama's basement. Go outside. Find a job. You know, and I know we characterize wrestling fans as like unemployed, but a lot of these people act like it, right? Go outside. Go find you a job. Stop caring about what people say on social media. If someone's opinion hurts your feelings, scroll on. Let's move on with it, right? So here's why I take her opinion at a higher standard than these dweebs on the internet who are complaining about it. Now, surprisingly, and maybe it's just my algorithm, surprisingly, I'm finding that a lot of people may not agree with her, but are saying she has the right to have her opinion. But because here's the thing. I think on this issue, I don't think it's as new as like, I think it's more black and white than most other issues, right? And the issue at hand is, should biological males who transition to females play in female sports? Now I'm going to say something. This probably won't trigger y'all. So here you go. Common sense tells you no. Right? Common sense tells you no. But here's also a reason why I would listen to what Jada Parker is saying on this issue over any of these people who are these keyboard warriors. She's had to go through this. Let me tell you what I mean. You don't make LSU soccer team just by mere coincidence. You had to grind and play and participated, and these women, these female athletes, these biological women, female athletes, who sacrifice time, family vacations, parents paid a boatload of money for them to go to camps, right? These people who make it D1, they sacrifice a lot in high school, right? I've never went through that grind. A lot of us will never go through that type of grind to make it as a D1 athlete, right? And so what's happening now is that these women are grinding, sacrificing everything in high school to try to get a spot on a D1 school for the potentiality that their spot on the team gets taken away because some dude who isn't good in male sports, and that's typically what this is a lot of times it's a biological male who's average at male sports, but knows if he transitions to the female and plays female sports, he would dominate. And that's not everyone, but right. And so I want to give you an example of what I believe is an injustice to women and women's sports that just happened this year, right? I'm very passionate on this because as men, I feel like as men, we are designed to provide and protect for women. That's just the way we're designed. And we don't have men. We have men playing cowards and sitting in the background and watching this happen and no one speaking up about it. Not me. Right. This issue actually irritates the piss out of me. It does. And we have people who aren't saying nothing. Well, I'm going to say something because here's what happened. Right. You have women. Let's go to the world of volleyball. In the Mountain West. Now, not a top premier conference. Here's why it's never a top premier conference, right? Leah Thomas was on Penn in Ivy League, right? Well, there's a reason none of this happens in the ACC or the SEC or the Big Ten. Those conferences aren't going to deal with this. If you cost them money, they're not going to, right? But the Mountain West, it's a mid-tier conference. Doesn't get a lot of exposure. And so it slips through the cracks, right? But it still doesn't make it right. So what happened out here? Well, San Jose State, another team in the Mountain West, has a biological male who transitioned to female on their team. And yes, that's the term I'm using, right? Biological male who transitioned to female on their team. Now, there's already women on the team who've either anonymously or by name come out and said they're uncomfortable with that biological male who transitioned into female being on the team and being able to be in the locker room with other biological women at the same time while they're changing and getting ready, that it disturbs the peace, right? Now, the first thing I want to say on that is no woman should ever feel unsafe in a purse or in a private place like a locker room. That's not fair. It's just not fair. They should never feel unsafe, right? And the people who are supporting this are going to be the same people who in the next breath say we need to protect women and we need to speak up against rape culture. And I'm not saying all transgender people are rapists. I'm not saying that. But right. But these same people who want to push for women's rights in the next breath are going to push for legislation that would allow biological men to be in locker rooms and bathrooms at the same time as women because of women's rights. That's not women's rights. That's insanity is what it is. Let's just be honest. Let's call a spade here. This is common sense. Right? And so this biological male who transitioned to female, pretty I don't know volleyball positions, but this athlete plays the position. I don't even know the names of the players on the team. I just know the example of and some of the details of what happened, right? So San Jose State hardly ever lost. Wonder why. And they made the conference title championship game, the Mountain West Conference championship game, and they were playing against Boise State. Now, Boise State, this is a team. These women grinded to earn a spot on a D1 school, grinded all season long to make a spot in the conference championship, only to have to forfeit because they decided they valued their safety over a conference championship. Now, in a sport like volleyball, where there's not a big pro league that they can make millions off of, this is a big decision. Some of these women athletes on this Boise State team were that would have been their last game of their life in volleyball. And they had to sacrifice that for, dare I say, some person's delusion. And so that other people could feel, so other people can have the right to, that they don't actually have guaranteed by any constitution anywhere. Right? It's just, it's insanity. It's insanity at this point. And so Jada Parker applauds being a D1 athlete who grinded. Did she play a lot of LSU? No, but she made the team. She got a scholarship. And LSU is a tough place to go. It's where all the top athletes that we're talking about right now. Look at all the top premier athletes that we talk about that come out of LSU in various sports. Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, Livy Dunn, Paul Skeens, Livy Dunn's boyfriend, I believe came from LSU. And he plays baseball. One of the top MLB pitchers on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Angel Reese, right? LSU is a place that recruits high-level athletes. You don't make an SEC team without being a high-level athlete in high school. That doesn't guarantee you a spot to start or to play. There are several five-star football recruits that go to SEC teams that don't play a down because there's 20 more five-star recruits in front of them. Right? So, like, I'm going to take her opinion because she's lived it. She understands the sacrifice it takes for these women to get stolen away from by biological males who transition. Now, let's go to my next point. You can support the LGBT movement. It's right to exist. Or let me back up. Their ability to exist. Because it's a movement. Movements don't have rights. Right? People have rights, but movements don't. You can support the LGBT movement's ability to exist, right, on this hand, while on this hand protecting the ability for biological women to play sports in a safe manner. Right? Let's go back to this volleyball example. If this person, you know, served the ball, it's faster, it's quicker, it's harder than any other biological woman. Right. Why? Well, this person's 6'2". Most women are 5'5 to 5'9". This person's like, I don't know their exact weight, but I would assume, you know, they're somewhere in the 200s. Most women, you know, are 120, 140, right, or in that area. The muscle mass of this person, regardless of the fact that there's a narrative by people who are proponents of this happening, who applaud it, and they preach this narrative that blockers stop muscle mass. And guys, regardless of all that, it's all BS, by the way. There's actual science on this. There is still the natural changing, the natural fact of the matter that me as a 6'2", you know, let's imagine Jada Parker, her birth name, I know her last name's Kathy. I don't remember her first name. By the way, her cousin played for the Chicago Bulls in the 90s. So she comes from this pedigree of athlete. Like, she understands it, right? So let's imagine that I played soccer at Arkansas, which is another SEC school. At the same time, Jada Parker played at LSU, right? And let's imagine, so I actually looked her up. When she was in LSU, she was like 5'7", like 120, I believe was what her page said. I don't exactly remember the weight. I don't care to look for women's weight. It's not important to me. The point is she's 5'7", like less than 150 pounds, right? And let's say that I, at 6'2", let's see, when I was in college age, I was like, I was pushing like 350, right? So let's say that I had some level of soccer skill and ability, and I was on there, but I couldn't make the men's soccer team because at 350 pounds, because obvious reasons. So I transitioned and said, look, man, I'm a woman now. I'm going to go play on the women's team. And they let me play, right? And now Jada Parker played midfield. So that's where a lot of the physicality in soccer. Soccer can be a physical sport, and it happens a lot of times in the midfield. So let's say I came and I was going for the ball, and Jada Parker was going for the ball at the same time while she was at LSU, right? And I just truck her, right? Give her a little bit of a shoulder lean and just truck her and, like, seriously injure her. That is a possibility. Why? Because I still have male features. I still have the muscle mass of a man, still have the agility and the every advantage that man was given for biological reasons. You know, we were the hunter gatherers, so we needed stamina, long terms of stamina to go on long hunts. We needed strength to be able to hunt, and so all of these things that were given to us. But biologically, that doesn't just change because I do hormone replacement or I use blockers. That doesn't change, right? And it's not reversible once you get on these things, right? The effects of blockers aren't reversible, as they're telling you, right? There's actual facts to the matter here, right? And but here's my main point. I already said it. I'm going to come back to it. Someone like Jada Parker shouldn't be an issue. Someone like Riley Gaines shouldn't have to spend her prime of her life campaigning and suing the NCAA. These seven women, I think there's seven of them. These seven women athletes, female athletes, who are suing the NCAA for allowing this to happen. This should not be a case. This is a failure on men for not caring about their daughters, not caring about their sisters, and allowing this to happen. Jada Parker shouldn't be the one fighting this. This is a failure of society. This shouldn't be an issue, but it is. And what it shows is that double standard that I've been talking about. Because CM Punk can hold a, right? CM Punk can hold a political sign, whether you want to say it's political or not, it's a political sign, support trans youth. And whether or not you agree with that message is irrelevant. Just like I said, you can support their ability to exist without removing the ability for biological women to play sports in a place that makes them safe and where they won't get hurt. I mean, in the UK, you had a adult male who, in his like 30s, who identified as a 12-year-old girl who played rugby and was physically hurting, like injuring other little 12-year-old girls. And y'all say that that's okay, you're the problem. Not Jada Parker for trying to fight against it. And I'm certain Jada Parker's not this uber conservative, like Hulk Hogan level conservative. But she's getting the same wrath that these people have been getting. The same wrath from the IWC that I've been getting. Here's the case. If you don't like what they got to say, keep scrolling. That's how social media works. But let's go back to point one. No one is obligated to accept the way you live or believe. No one's obligated to. Wrestling fans need to go out, touch grass, and move on with their life. Allow people to have their opinions. People are going to people are going to disagree with you. That's just how the world works. There's a double standard, though, in the fan base, and this exposes it. Better than Hogan getting booed, better than any other previous example, this right here exposed it. All right, so let's fantasy book NXT Vengeance Day. So the first question is, why are we doing this? And the answer, because I'm going to it. I'll be in the building in Washington, D.C. on February the 15th. So let's fantasy book. So I'm going down their typical pathway of PLEs. I'm going five matches. Three of them I feel very comfortable in predicting. The other two, I feel like this is where we're leaning towards, but I'm not 100% certain with what's being shown on TV. Right? I need a little bit more data to feel more certain, but we're going to predict them anyway. We're about a month away from it. I don't think there's any like special episode in the way that's going to do anything. I know they're going to Atlanta in 2 weeks. And so that's going to have some bigger matches on it. Like Fallon Henley versus Shotzi Blackheart will be there. Right. So one of the matches that I'm comfortable is Fallon Henley. I think she will be defending the Women's North American title. I don't think Shotzi wins in Atlanta on the 28th, I believe is that date. I do believe, with 100% certainty, it will be Fallon Henley defending the title against Stephanie Vaquer, which excites me because that's going to be a banger match. And this is I was 100% certain with this one after the result on Tuesday, this episode where Shotzi got the win, and then they said, oh, well, she's defending it in Atlanta on an episode of NXT against Shotzi. And then I was like, oh, well, okay, well, we get Shotzi in Atlanta. That means I'm going to get Stephanie in DC, which is perfect for me, right? Another match that I'm 100% confident we're going to get. It's Ethan Page versus Javon Evans. And I can't wait for this. This is, Vengeance Day is the PLE name. This is going to be Javon Evans' vengeance on Ethan Page for breaking his jaw and hurting Dante Chin on like he did Tuesday and like a couple weeks before hurting Cedric Alexander, right? So I'm confident this match happens there. I'm also confident that Tony D'Angelo defends the North American title against Ridge Holland. And so those are the three matches that I'm super confident we're going to get. Now we're going to talk about the women's champion, Julia, and the NXT champion, Obafemi. I believe they both have matches. I'm a little bit less confident in the person they're going to be fighting. So Julia, I have Lola Vice. And from what I understand, she won like a number one contendership at like a live show in like Dade County at like an NXT live event over like one of their little house shows. And I'm assuming they're going to bring that to TV in the coming weeks and that Julia will face Lola Vice. Obafemi is a little bit hard for me to predict because with still being a month out, I don't know if we're going to do Obafemi versus Eddie Thorpe. I know they have a match next week, I believe. I don't know if it's for the title. And I still don't know, like, is this going to be one of the matches at the Atlanta show? And they'll find a new opponent for the PLE. At this point, I do have Obafemi versus Eddie Thorpe. This could change. This is probably going to be the only match that I would change the matchup. Being determined by the storyline as it gets presented. Eddie Thorpe, Vengeance Day isn't like a big PLE. It's just to help to get us from New Day's Evil into Stand and Deliver in season. So I think it's going to be Eddie Thorpe, but I'm not 100% certain. But that's my five matches. I had a sixth on here that possibly could happen, which was Alexis King versus Charlie Dempsey. But I think they're getting their their rematch, which I think will be the end of the feud, on next Tuesday. And so that's where I believe that ends that. And so I don't think we'll get Lexus King or Charlie Dempsey on this card. It's hard for me to see them put, I mean, we've had Heritage Cup matches on PLEs, but when you need other things to be done outside, like that storyline could take a backseat for a PLE, in my opinion. All right, so that's Vengeance Day. I don't have a lot of, you know, a lot of those storylines are super self-explanatory if you watch NXT. I'm not some mad dragon just pulling matches out of my hat. I go based off of what we see on the TV. So there's two final things that I want to talk about in what we're going to call react to this. There's two tweets. So Santi Zap did a tweet on Monday, and Corey Graves did a tweet. I think it was also on Monday. But Santi, during Raw, made the tweet. I'm saying it. Episode 2 of Raw Netflix is greater than the debut episode. And I 100% agree. But that's the point. That was the point. So while Santi is technically correct, episode 2 was a banger, was one of the best Raws ever. In my memory of watching Raw since 2014 that I can remember, definitely better than episode 1. But that was the point. Episode 1 wasn't about matches. It wasn't about being the best episode. It was about introducing the fan base to Netflix, introducing the new audience they were bringing in to WWE, and just putting on sort of like a big, like I said, this was day one PLE on a Monday night. Just like I said, right? And so what typically happens after a PLE? Like when we're done with Rumble, the Raw after Rumble is going to be a banger, right? And then so that's all this was. This was WWE day one. And instead of doing it on Saturday the 4th, they did it on Monday the 6th. And it was a PLE on Netflix, right? And that's what it was. And so episode 2 of Raw on Netflix, which could technically be like the Raw following day one, was the better episode. And without a doubt, he's not wrong there. Corey Graves did a tweet, and this is an interesting thing. He said, imagine chasing your dream, then being told, not deciding, that you are no longer physically able to pursue your dream. Then you dedicate your life to something dream adjacent. He's talking about him on commentary. And being pretty fucking awesome at it. And then when it's time to enjoy the fruits of your labor, being told you're not famous enough for your own job. Just in case you've wondered where I've been. Now, he seems to have a gripe. I share in the gripe of Corey Graves. Pat McAfee, I've said numerous amount of times, doesn't add anything to the show. They shouldn't have messed with the booth at all. Tessa Torin-Barrett should have stayed on Raw. If they wanted to put Michael Cole on Raw, they could have had him and Corey Graves on Raw and Tessa Torin-Barrett Barrett on SmackDown. That's not an issue. The issue is that Pat McAfee comes in. He's only part-time. He's going to be here till football season comes around, and then he's going to leave again. And I can see how that cycle can get frustrating when you're someone as good as Corey Graves who is probably outside. If you take Michael Cole off of commentary and you look at other people, and Michael Cole's the GOAT, right? If you look at the rest of the company, Corey Graves is probably, I'm not going to say the best because I think Vic Joseph is better, but I think Corey Graves is a top three in the company and a top five in pro wrestling commentators. Like if I had to do my top five wrestling commentators of all companies, Michael Cole, Vic Joseph, Corey Graves, Tom Phillips from TNA is very good, and number five is sort of like up in the air. I don't really have a number five. I think Tony Schiavone, from a career perspective, just out of respect for his work, his early like WCW work was fantastic. So I'll put Shivani on that list. I don't think his stuff now with AEW is all that impressive. I just don't think he flows with the style of wrestling that AEW does. This is me, though. But yeah, Corey Graves is a top five wrestling commentator of current commentators. And for him to seemingly be demoted because Pat McAfee is more famous, that's asinine to me. I'm just going to be completely honest. But a part of me is going to say, hold on, wait a minute. Don't overreact to this. Let's pause. He was just cleared, or the rumors have been that he's been cleared to get in the ring. What if this is a work? What if he's getting back in the ring? And what if it's Corey Graves versus McAfee? Now, I don't want Corey Graves versus McAfee, just personally. I don't. Corey Graves, if Corey Graves is transitioning back to full-time wrestler, that and that's why they took him off the booth, I'm all for it, right? But I just, if he's, I just, I think we'll see at the Rumble, because part of me believes he'll be in the Rumble. Yeah, so I'll say it that way. But that's all I have for you all. Thank you all for watching and listening. Thank you all for supporting the show. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a comment on what you feel. And until the next time, I will see you on the next episode of the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slappin' Meat Wrestling every Tuesday.